Welcome to The Toolbox with our hosts, Joe Mangi and
the Raven.
Buckle up and get ready. You're not going to want to miss a single second of this.
You are now listening to 97.7 WVFF. This is The Toolbox. I'm your host, Joe Mangi, with my lovely co-host, Raven. Today, we're going to be doing some history on big rigs.
And some other fun facts.
Yeah, and some other stuff. But I figured we'd start off with some automotive news.
Yes, sir.
So, I'm excited about this, and I don't even know why, but Ford is bringing the Lobo name to the States. It used to only be in Mexico. For some reason, the F-150, if it's sold in Mexico, it's called a Lobo. But it's going to be a trim package on the new Ford Maverick. I think it lowers it a little bit, puts bigger wheels on it and a different grill.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty neat, even though I don't think the Maverick's a truck. But
yeah.
Also, Hyundai issued a recall and a stop sale on the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe's because their airbags might not work. Or they might just randomly go off. So
you'd be driving down the highway and then airbag.
That's what they say. They issued a stop sale. If you go to Hyundai right now and try getting a Santa Fe, they're going to say no.
Oh.
Come back. Or actually, they'll probably have it fixed by the time y'all are hearing this. Because when I looked it up today, I think the fix is repairing the harness for that.
Oh, are they?
Supposedly. I don't know. Oh, God.
What did you do?
Nothing. We are breaking chairs.
Breaking cars and breaking chairs.
That's how we do it right here.
Okay.
Got it. You see, I did it earlier. I thought I fixed it. I didn't fix it.
No. But I also said if you fell out of that thing backwards, I was going to laugh at you,
too. Edit that bit out.
No, leave it in.
Another recall. Tesla has a recall affecting more than 1.8 million vehicles. There is a warning light for the hood. Like, if your hood's open, it has a little light. And sometimes that light won't work. So, 1.8 million cars are getting recalled because of that.
So, wait, is, like, the hood not closing, or is the light just saying that it's not closed, but it is?
No, so if your hood isn't closed all the way, a light is supposed to come on.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what that light's supposed to look like. Oh, I guess it's the hood open?
Yeah.
But, so that...
So if you leave it open, the light doesn't come on, letting you know, hey, you didn't close this all the way.
Yes.
Oh, wow, so you'd be driving down the road and just, whoop. I've had that happen. I've been in a car where someone didn't close the hood down all the way, like flying down the road, and all of a sudden that thing popped up and knocked out a windshield.
There was one time my mom, she had a black Camaro back in the day, and we were drying a beach towel. It was a black beach towel on the hood, and we forgot we left it on there.
And no.
When we took off, we thought it was the hood, because I swear, it just went, poof, and we were like, ugh! But luckily, it was just a beach towel. And it was a convertible, so we're just like, ugh.
Oh, okay. You didn't even have to stop for that one. But Whistling Diesel, speaking of Tesla, also did a truck test for the Tesla truck and found out that if you close the doors too hard on a Tesla pickup, that they just come off.
Oh, yeah.
They pop right out.
The inside trim panel, if someone slams the door.
Yeah, and then you go to try to reopen your door, it won't open because the panel in the door has separated. So now you're just pulling your vehicle apart. And that's just from slamming a door. That's something that children do every day, getting out of cars, slamming the door shut.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I always thought like they'd have and screw.
No,
you know?
No. How it looked like they didn't have a single screw. Like it was either sticky taped on there.
I think it was just like plastic clips.
Plastic clips.
If you slam it hard enough,
the thing just popped right out.
And speaking of YouTube, this is kind of going on a sidetrack, but James Pumphrey left Donut Media, which he was like the head guy. Last month, a couple of other of the head guys left Donut Media too. So that's crazy. Like all the main people are gone. So I don't know.
All the good automotive YouTubes to listen or watch are.
Yeah. They're all starting their own channels.
I mean,
I don't know. I guess we need to make a YouTubes. But that's all we had for automotive news. I mean, we could go on more with like recalls and stuff, but that's boring.
I mean, I think we pretty much called out the main ones because everyone's worried about getting the Teslas. There's like, oh, the Tesla's the cool vehicle to have. It's not really, because from everything I hear about a Tesla, it's like, oh yeah, it was $500,000 and it doesn't work.
Oh, well, speaking of Teslas in this storm.
Oh,
they
God.
Are that you could drive them underwater.
Oh yeah. Yeah, until they run out of battery.
Well, yeah.
Do you think you could get electrocuted sitting in an electric Tesla?
I don't. So years ago.
How does that
work? Years ago.
How are you supposed to charge it if the thing's in water?
Oh, I wouldn't. That's terrible. Like even in the rain.
You wouldn't test that theory?
No. So years ago, going off topic. So the first Gambler 500 vehicle I bought was a hybrid Honda Civic.
You bought a hybrid?
Yeah. So. It was late one night, we were on Craigslist, and I was looking for something, you know. Anyone, you know, the Gambler 500, you have to get. You don't have to.
500 or less. That's supposed to make it fun. Yeah. That's how it's fun.
So this guy, he had a Honda Civic Hybrid with no body panels on it. No doors, no hood, no
just
trunk.
Just the frame?
Yeah, it was just that and a windshield. And he wanted like $650 for it. And I offered him $200, thinking he wasn't going to accept it. And he said, yep, come get it. And I was like, oh, no.
Ain't no way. Now you have to get it.
Yeah, I was like, oh, no, I don't even want this. So I had to go buy it. And then I bought another Civic that wasn't a hybrid for $200.
Y'all
like took all the body panels off. And then it never worked again, ever.
I mean.
But that was a concern because it was a hybrid.
That seems to be a thing with you. When you buy cheap vehicles, you take all the panels off. Because didn't y'all do that with the Dukes of Hazzard car, too? Y'all took the windshield, the glass, doors.
It came. So, apparently, we bought it off a guy. When I say we, I didn't buy it. My buddy Case bought it for, I think it was $75. And it came with all the windows broken out.
Jeez.
And bullet holes in the hood. And then we painted it like the General Lee.
Yeah. No, I think I saw that car running once.
Yeah, no, he got rid of it. He scrapped it.
Oh, I thought it was still parked back in the woods.
No, he ended up scrapping it. I mean, I don't blame him, but like, wait, he probably made like $5. I would have gave him 10, you know?
No, I'm glad he scrapped it because that would have been sitting in our front yard as freaking lawn ornament.
Beautiful lawn art. '85 Tracel with an 01 on the door.
I'll take a rusted tractor over that, please.
Oh, yeah. All right, so today's episode of the Toolbox, talking about the history of the big rig. We should have said some like CB stuff.
I still like the Breaker 1.9. But I don't want to be saying nothing incorrect. I don't know what 1.9 stands for. Like, what if I'm saying like some bad trucker slang?
All I'm saying, it's better than 10-200.
I don't think we're allowed to say that.
What are you talking about? If anyone has any cool CB slang, call us up right now.
You want me to give them your phone number?
No.
All right, so we're going to start this off with the history of big rigs, off in the 19th century, because apparently that's when they started building these things. Before they were able to come up with a motor strong enough to put into one of these vehicles, they had to use horses or trains to carry big loads. So, like, I've seen videos of this where they've loaded up, like, 6 horses, sort of like a sled dog team.
Yeah, but with horses. Big old Clydesdale.
Yeah, and that's how they would move, like, the huge equipment. And I always feel so bad with, like, seeing those animals all chained up together like that. But, I mean, you gotta move a tank somehow.
Yeah, you're right about
big
that.
Big piece of cargo. So the dude who started this was named Alexander Winton. He was a Scottish immigrant, and in 1896, he decided he was going to try his hand at building a big rig truck. He originally owned a bike shop and shifted his focus to motors. He launched a series of handcrafted automobiles and just decided to give it a go. All his cars originally rode on BF Goodrich tires. Now, are they the same as Goodrich?
No. Goodyear.
No, they're different. Or they're different company?
Different company.
Because I thought they were also called BF something.
No, that's just, so you got Goodyear.
Yeah.
They're older than,
older than cars. Is Goodrich tires even still around?
Oh, I got them on the front of the truck right now.
You do?
I do. I got BFGs on the front.
Ah, I didn't know they were still, making tires for vehicles.
Speaking of tires, man, any tire companies out there that want to give me some tires, let me know.
Send them some stickers.
I'll plug you every day. Not even on the radio. I'll tell everyone.
So Alexander Winton invented the first semi-truck in 1898. That's where he put all his pieces and put them together into something to resemble a big rig truck, but he didn't get to sell his first vehicle until a year later in 1899.
Yeah, so this truck, it was actually a modified car, and I kind of use the word car lightly because it was like a horse carriage without the horse.
Yeah.
He modified one of those, and it was literally like it kind of looked like a rickshaw cart. It was just two wheels, flat deck, and a couple arms on the back of one of his cars, and he made it to put another car on the back to take to customers who bought them. Yeah. So instead of driving,
drove them there and then got into the other car and drove back.
Oh, that's better than what I was thinking. I thought they just had a walk back or something.
Oh, what if they had someone had to follow in a horse? Imagine following a car in a horse.
I wonder if they traded in the horse. Hey, we'll drop your new car off. We're going to take your old horse, drop them off at the glue factory.
No! Don't! That's horrible. They better not have. I will cry if I find out that's what they really did to them horses.
I don't know. You think they just let them loose?
But no, that wouldn't make sense if they did follow with the horse, because back in the day, the first truck was considered a race car because it went a whopping 33 miles an hour. And that was considered like super fast.
That is super fast. I almost said that's faster than a horse, but I think a horse could go faster than that.
I think they could. If anybody who owns or knows horses.
Yeah.
Heike.
Hey, email us with the fastest speed your horse is going.
Email us where?
This is me.
Okay. So in 1910, improvements to the engines, transmissions, and expanded roadways gave rise to the popularity of the shipping truck, aka the big rig. In 1914, there was over 100,000 trucks on the American roads, but at this point, the operations were still only secluded to the four states, just due to the weight limits that trucks could hold, the tires, the lack of trailers, roads, and even back in the day, again, speed limit was still only like 15 miles an hour. That's ridiculously slow for a big rig that's already hauling something that weighs about 18,000 pounds or to 28,000 pounds, excuse me. imagine trying to carry that down a bumpy, unpaved dirt road. That
sounds terrible.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
They didn't even have doors back then. Getting all muddy.
I forgot about that back in the
Sitting
day.
Sitting on a wooden seat.
A lot of cars, yeah, didn't have seat cushions, doors, and no AC either.
Yeah, speaking of... like efficiency, kind of in the heyday, I know we're jumping a little bit ahead, but some manufacturers even experimented, they started going from gas engines to diesel, which all big rigs now are turbo diesel. But some manufacturers like Mack and I think Kenworth experimented with jet turbine powered big rigs. And those things are sick. There is a cab over jet powered Mack at the Mack Museum in Pennsylvania. And it's my favorite one there. Because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah, believe it or not, yeah, that's...
I mean, but if you got time, didn't catch on.
It didn't catch on jet powered anything except for jets. They even had off topic, but they had a jet powered tractor.
Mow that tractor. Mow that field. In 0.3 seconds. Jesus.
Also off top, I wonder if they made those engines specific for those, or if they'd like bought jet engines and tossed them in. I don't know.
You know that's what they did. They just bought them. They were like, I wonder if I can put this onto that. And a couple bolts and wrenches later, that's what they came up with.
Be flying.
Jesus.
But other improvements for big rigs. In 1888, John Dunlop created the first pneumatic tire, which was filled with air. A lot of early drivers did not like the air-filled tires because you had to put air in them. You know, air could leak out. And it also restricted how much weight you could put on the back of your truck because you could pop them.
Oh, yeah.
If you look up, like, old pictures of, like, early 1900s trucks, oh, man.
They got the big old they had stacked high wheels with the thick rubber.
Yeah, like solid steel cast wheels they with solid rubber.
They honestly look like train wheels. The wheels on the side of a train, that's honestly what they look like on the... on the trucks, except they just put a
band of rubber.
And
another thing with air tires, they wear out faster than solid rubber. Because when we were at that truck show, there's still some 100-plus-year-old tires on these things. They're just solid rubber.
Oh, yeah. And they ain't changed those tires in a minute.
But luckily, they did eventually change. You know, you said they were limited to 15 miles an hour and a certain amount of weight. They are still limited. And there is still weight requirements. Of course, I didn't look up what those were. But luckily, they did change. Yeah. I do know they say, like, the best efficiency in a big rig is 55 miles an hour.
Oh, but they can go faster than that.
Oh, they can. Especially, like, the cool old ones, like, from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Smoking the Bandit. Snowman was pushing 90 in that thing.
That's a great classic movie.
That's the best movie.
Keep going with stuff that they were fixing. Diesel engines. When they started putting those into big rigs, it actually increased their fuel efficiency by 20% to 40% over the gasoline engines. This is also the same time that they started telling them, like, hey, we're also going to be putting in power-assisted steering and brakes. Apparently that wasn't a thing back in the day.
Just push to a stop.
Yeah, just hope you break. Hope you slow down enough. You know, not on a hill. By 1933, trucks were so common in all states that they started to have to form the truck weight regulation. That's where they start putting those stops on the side of the highway, be like, hey, you got to weigh the truck here, you know. And then
oh, like weigh stations.
Yeah, that's when they started implementing that.
DOT.
Yeah. Turbochargers, they started putting those in there, and that was becoming standard equipment, so it wasn't just like a custom thing you put on your truck. That was coming in all trucks. All the big rigs were getting the turbochargers.
Still to this day. They're all turbo diesel.
Yeah, and what's even funnier is that it wasn't until 1997. So in 33, that's when they gave them brakes and regulations. It wasn't until 97 that they put the anti-lock brakes on the semi-trucks.
I didn't even know they had them.
Like, it's required now, but it wasn't until then did that become a requirement.
And now that you mention it, I can't remember the last time I've seen... like dual black marks on a road for them locking up. Let's see. Speaking of regulations, they had a length regulation back in the day. That's why a lot of older trucks are the cab over style. They have real flat front, cab on top of the engine, referred to as COEs, cab over engine.
They remind me of pugs.
Yeah.
That smush face.
I like them. It's just a brick.
And it's some of them. Literally hitting a brick.
Some of them are like super narrow. Like the door is touching the front of the cab and the back. It's just the one door. And it's like.
Oh, like that one really old one that was like.
Super
seat
tall.
Was on top of the motor.
Yeah. They were making them as compact as they could. Because you could only have a certain length trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Or the whole thing, truck and trailer, could only be a certain length. So the shorter and smaller the truck was,
the longer and bigger the
more
could be.
You know, the more stuff you could haul.
Yeah.
So that's when everyone was getting shorter and shorter. There was a lot of single axle trucks,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of the tandem axle trucks were, the cabs were that big. I know for all you listeners.
Yay, big! It's about fingers to elbow length.
Yeah. Like I don't know. See, back in the day, I don't think you'd be a big guy driving one of those trucks.
No, well, I also think that's before they,
Before Circle K biscuits?
Yeah, I think that was before Circle K biscuits. Back in the day, I think the truckers started out as farmers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that is a loophole that a lot of people use for not having a CDL. If you're hauling, like, a grain truck, like, if you're hauling grain from a farm.
I mean, I figure if you can drive a tractor, you should be allowed to drive.
A tractor trailer.
I mean, come on.
You could drive a tractor with a trailer.
I mean, back in the day, they all had the same levers. They all had 14 levers, two steering wheels.
Made by the same people. Jeez, international.
Man. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you drive one, you drive the other.
Sorry, I didn't mention, speaking of cab over trucks, most trucks in Europe are still cab over style. They have, smaller roads, smaller towns. They do have different length restrictions, so that's why pretty much all European trucks are cab overs, still to this day.
Do they have more cab overs in Boston? Because don't y'all have more of the winding small roads, or are they all...
Traditional.
Dang.
Long hood.
Dang.
Big Pete's.
Y'all do have the cooler trucks up there, though.
That's one thing
I don't know. The prettier ones, that's how I should say.
I don't know what... You would think the South would have, like, a better, like, trucking culture. Like, better, like, more antique trucks because nothing rusts down here.
Well, that too, but it's not only that. It's when we were up there, I saw a lot of trucks. They had, like, pinstriping and gold flake paint and, like, just the attention to detail.
And a lot of them are still used as trucks.
Oh, yeah. No, I couldn't believe the dump trucks. Like, looked. They were pristine, polished.
Polishing the aluminum dump body on your dump truck. I've never seen that down here.
I mean, that's a good twist to the show truck, even though it's still a work truck. And speaking of show trucks, in 1970s, that's when people started realizing that, trucks are kind of cool. And Hollywood started putting their twist onto the big rig lifestyle. It became a trend, basically. You know, everybody see the trucks and they're like, oh, you know, that's something cool. That's something, you know, we want to get into. We want to learn more about. Back when this started, there were over 18 million trucks on the road. Nowadays, I found out they calculated there's only about 3.5 million on the road.
Like, that's crazy.
That's a big jump. But I think why it was so popular back then is because when it started out, they started putting the trucks in movies. You know, they started making them look cool. Like, all this
Smokey and the Bandit.
Smokey and the Bandit. They made the trucker seem like the lone wolf outlaws, the renegades, free birds. Like, oh, this is the cool life, you know, living on the road. Rustic kind of thing. The movies like Smokey and the Bandit and the songs like Convoys rose to the top of the box office and Billboard charts. Like,
yeah,
you couldn't go anywhere without anybody knowing about those references. But nowadays, you say, hey, you heard a Convoy, people look at you like you're crazy.
What's
that? Yeah, what is that? And it's just crazy to think, like, you know, it's still such a cool topic, but nobody really talks about it anymore.
Yeah. So speaking of the 60s and 70s, weird regulations back then. If you ever notice, a lot of the, if you see like an older big rig, a lot of times they have a whole bunch of different license plates on the front. That's because back in the day, so if you were driving from Florida to North Carolina, you'd have to register your truck in Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina, even though you're just going, just driving through them. You used to have to register, so you'd have a different plate for every state, and then they changed it to where you could just have a different registration sticker, and they had a special plate with a bunch of squares where you could put the different registration stickers, and then finally, they're like, wow, this is pretty dumb.
Yeah,
we're
going
to change it to where you could drive your truck through any state as long as it's up to spec in your state.
Oh, yeah. No, and what's crazy is now because of that, because they got tired of having to register them and everywhere that they went, majority of trucks, actually 1/3 of all semi-trucks operating in the U.S. are all registered either in California, Florida, or Texas.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and it's like, so they could be hauling stuff to South Carolina or New York, but registration says they in Texas.
Yeah.
So.
I'm amazed that Arizona's not on that list.
No, apparently it wasn't a big enough number. Apparently not as many vehicles are registered through Arizona as there are through Florida, California, and Texas. I understand Texas, because it's Texas.
If you ever see a U-Haul truck, license plate is Arizona. They're all registered in Arizona. But I think it's because I think there's like some weird thing in Arizona. You don't need to pay tax for registration or something like that.
They also probably don't have to take the vehicles back to get inspected yearly. That's another thing. Friggin' having to get imagine having a rig registered in New York and then yearly you got to take that thing back there to get
inspected.
Like, geez.
Well, also, I think that's why DOT plays such a big part. Because, like, if you get a light out, DOT's stopping you and finding you.
Yeah.
So, I thought this was going to be at the very tippity top. The term semi-truck refers to... where am I at? Jeez. Okay, the term semi-truck refers to the trailer portion of the trailer, which was originally only half of the size when it was designed in France.
Yeah.
But nowadays, it's the opposite. Nowadays, the semi part of the semi truck, twice, three times, sometimes four times the size of the truck part.
Oh, yeah.
Got to be leaving with one of the biggest truck manufacturers, Mack. One of the first successful big rig manufacturers. They started in 1900. In Brooklyn, New York, Mack trucks were known for their toughness and reliability. They had, like, super tough engines, transmissions, drivetrains. Couldn't kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, they were used in World War I. And British soldiers gave them the nickname of Bulldogs because, you know, they were just tough. Tough, ready to go. And because of that, Mack adopted and trademarked the Bulldog logo as their mascot. They did that in 1932, and you could still find a Bulldog proudly sitting on the hood of every Mack still made. To this day, get a Bulldog on the hood. And they still make military trucks for the U.S. Army.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they make cool dump trucks.
I wonder if they also have the Mack symbols, or if they, because they're military, they have to have something else.
It's like a green Bulldog. They did have, so one thing, I think in the 80s to 90s, I might be wrong about the year part, but if you ever see a Mack with a gold Bulldog, that means that truck came with a Mack engine, Mack transmission, and Mack axles.
Oh.
So most trucks, not a lot of people know. So like, you get a Mack truck with a Cummins engine, and an Allison transmission, and I don't know, Dana rears. I have no idea about axles on trucks.
Mm-hmm.
But Mack, at one point in time, I'm not sure if they still do it, but years ago, Mack manufactured their own engine, their own transmissions, and their own axles. So if you got a truck kitted out with all Mack stuff, you got a golden Bulldog.
Dang. So wait, do they still make them like that? Like you can go to Mac and like order.
I don't know.
Order your rig like that, or is that what's like? I know, don't do that anymore.
I know they still make engines. I know they still make their own engines. I'm not sure about the rest of it. That might be a topic for another day.
But that's pretty cool though to get that golden bulldog.
Yeah, I didn't know. I always thought it was a trim level. Whenever I seen one,
I thought it was just like a, you know, you pay a little extra, get the fancy accessory.
That's what I thought. And then I just happened to be scrolling on, I think it was YouTube or something like that. And like someone was breaking it down. I was like, oh, that's what that means. I thought it was just.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing any of those.
Oh, you'd see them.
I remember we saw the bulldog had a jacket. Someone did make a jacket for their bulldog.
Yeah. Earlier this year, we went up to Macungie.
Oh, yeah.
To the biggest antique truck show in the world.
Beautiful trucks, man. Beautiful scenery, beautiful weather. It was just so cool.
And because they're so big, like, they kind of get to drive them there. Most of them they'll have a classic big rig with a trailer with other classic big rigs, and they'll drive them all off and then park them. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember that one company, but they had like three semi-trucks with trailers filled with other semi-trucks.
That wasn't Green?
Oh, yeah, Green Construction's like that.
Because I thought that's how they roll. Them loading it up.
But there was one, I can't remember, they were like, I think it was like red, white, and blue, or maybe they were white and red.
I know what you're talking about.
Oh, no, they were green. They were white and green.
Yeah.
They had a weird name. It was like V something.
Yeah.
They had a fleet and a half of trucks up there. That was so cool.
But it was really cool.
Well, thank you for listening to the Toolbox. This was whatever part this is on the history of big rigs. We'll catch you next time. And then we'll go more in depth on manufacturers. And they race them on oval tracks, they drag race them, they do tractor pulls.
Oh yeah,
they're so cool,
some crazy stuff.
I really want one. I want a big rig.
Where are you gonna park it?
In the driveway.
Okay,
all right, well, till next time, this was the Toolbox. Thanks for listening to WVFF 97.7. I'm your host, Joe Manji, and this is my co-host, Raven.
Keep it cranking.
Change your oil. See you later.
We thank you for staying tuned to the Toolbox. If you missed it, not to worry. You can always find it over on WVFFradio.com. Thanks for staying tuned to Veterans for Freedom Radio, 97.7 FM. The Truth in Broadcasting Corporation.